Google's parent company Alphabet said late Thursday that Eric Schmidt, its executive chairman, will step down from his position at the company's next board meeting in January. In a statement, Schmidt said, quote, "The time is right in Alphabet's evolution for this transition. The Alphabet structure is working well, and Google and the other bets are thriving."
When you talk about digital movement of money, one half of the money moved by consumers today at Bank of America today is moved digitally. One half. This is not something new. When you get to an anonymous currency, that's a different question. And that's a policy question of whether we want an anonymous currency out there of size and scale and scope. I don't think you want it. I think the reason why the $100 bill is the largest denomination of bills was to make money more difficult to move other than through a verifiable system.
Canadian telecommunications and media company Rogers Communications is looking to generate money from its ownership of Canada's only Major League Baseball team, the Toronto Blue Jays, valued at $1.3 billion. While Rogers says it has no plans to sell the team, it's looking for ways to free up more cash to boost its balance sheet.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
And good morning, everybody. 5:10 in the morning. I'm not Steve Grzanich. I am Paul Lisnick from WGN TV, political analyst over there and host of Politics Tonight. Every weeknight at 5:30 on CLTV. Hopefully you join me there, but we're not doing politics today. We are doing business today. That's Steve's World. And boy, what a great show we have. You've probably heard there's a new tax plan that got passed by Congress, and the president looks like he will be signing into law today. Major, major changes in our taxes. I get a lot of people asking me about it. What does it mean for me? Is it a good thing? Is it not a good thing? And I wanted to be sure that we got you the answers. We're going to do that with my guest, Professor Mike Miller, this morning in just a moment. But first, on the Associated Bank Market Desk, the Dow Jones Industrial Average looking up today, 0.23%. The S&P 500 also looking up, 0.2%. The NASDAQ also looking up, 0.06%. The VIX looking down 2.18%. And some news happening overnight and this morning. As you did hear in that montage, Eric Schmidt will be stepping down as the executive chairman of Alphabet's board of directors, transitioning to technical advisor, the company announced. He will continue to serve on the company's board. Schmidt first joined Google as CEO in 2001, back when the company only had several hundred employees, and became its executive chairman 10 years later. He maintained that role when Google restructured to become Alphabet in 2015. Schmidt said in a statement, and I quote, "The Alphabet structure is working well, and Google and the other bets are thriving. In recent years, I've been spending a lot of time on science and technology issues and philanthropy, and I plan to expand that work." Schmidt tweeted, "Adult supervision no longer needed." Bitcoin, several other major cryptocurrencies plunging Thursday evening, New York time, as the end of an exponential year of growth neared. The slashing decline triggered temporary built-in trading halts in the Bitcoin futures traded on the CME and on the CBOE. Bitcoin plunging more than 20% to a low of $12,504, according to CoinDesk, down more than $3,000 from $15,820 less than 12 hours ago. The digital currency recovered slightly to $13,545, but still down almost 13% for the session. Papa John says its founder, John Schnatter, will step down as CEO next month, about 2 months after he publicly criticized the NFL leadership over national anthem protests by football players. The company said Thursday that Schnatter remains chairman, but will be replaced as chief executive by chief operating officer Steve Ritchie. That happens on January 1st. All right, this new tax plan becoming law today impacts every single one of us. The biggest change in decades and decades. What does it mean? What does it mean for us? And what does it mean for us in Illinois? Because the truth is, it has a different impact depending on where you live in this country. And I know we've got folks listening from all over the country, but hey, I want to know what's going to happen in Chicagoland. Joining me, Professor Mike Miller. He is the Associate Professor and Associate Dean for Quality and Compliance in the Department of Economics at DePaul University. That's a great title, Mike.
Thanks.
Yeah. Yes. Compliance.
Yeah, that we have to fill out lots of paperwork for accreditors. And I write lots of reports.
All right. Well, apparently your tax plan is only going to be filled out on a postcard. Speaking of paperwork, that's a clever transition to the topic. By the way, let me ask you that, since I just mentioned it. You know, I'm hearing some tax experts saying, yeah, you know, that whole postcard thing, that ain't happening.
They didn't do as many things to the tax package as a lot of people had hoped, that they would remove all kinds of deductions, and therefore it would simply be, tell us what your income is, how much did you pay, you should have paid this much, and so forth. So it's going to be a little bit longer, but the number of people who will not be itemizing deductions is going to go up. So it will be a shorter form. Even myself, I use TurboTax. I got to use something, but the complexity of it, it will be a little simpler. There won't be this itemized Schedule B many of us.
And is that because the itemizations aren't there, or is that because we won't need to do it with some of the changes we'll be talking about?
It's a combination of the two. They've doubled the standard deduction. So that means that if you don't have enough in terms of your mortgages and your state taxes and so forth and charitable giving, you don't even get to that. So your tax planner will say, no, you want to take the standard because it gives you the best, lowest taxes.
Let me just start globally, all right,
sure.
with because people – if you listen to Nancy Pelosi, then what we have is Armageddon. If you listen to Speaker Paul Ryan, what we have is exquisite. So I imagine somewhere between exquisite and Armageddon is the reality of this plan.
Yeah.
On a national level, I want to come to Illinois, but on a national level, is this a good thing for the country in terms of the tax structure?
Now, it's, in my opinion, because it is more efficient and easier to do and it will cost less money for everybody across the board, I think it is a good thing. There seem to be two philosophies about the nature of taxes. One is, of course, we all agree we have to raise enough money to run the government.
Right.
So that's the first piece. But then there becomes, how do you use the tax to do other things? And this is where you get into incentives. For example, if you give a tax break to firms where for the next 5 years they can write off their investments immediately, this gives them an incentive to do that kind of thing. Now, what you have is, in general, the Democrats like to use the tax policy as a way to help redistribute income that is highly progressive. The richer you are, you don't pay just more, you pay a lot more. The Republicans like a flatter tax that we pay roughly all the same percentage, and it is to be done in such a way as we incent people to invest as opposed to redistribute the income.
Although, by the way, Democrats are saying there is a redistribution of income here, and it's going upwards.
Well, it's because they're looking at it in terms of how much money, in terms of actual dollars, each different income group is going to save. So I was looking at some numbers. For example, the average person who is in the lowest quartile or quintile, which is the lowest 20%, will have a tax reduction of only $50. But those in the top quintile, it's $5,740. This is where they see the unfairness. But do you know that in the lowest quintile, the lowest 20% of taxpayers actually pay a negative income tax? They pay minus $600.
Does that mean they're getting it back?
They're getting money back. That's correct. So it's easy to say that the rich people are getting all the money. They're getting $5,000. I'm getting $50. But it's because you essentially pay nothing to begin with. So the better way to look at it is simply asking what is going to happen to my income, and what they're doing is they're lowering the marginal rate that you pay on each additional dollar you earn, so all of us will take home more pay.
So that's on a national perspective, and I'm sure folks are listening, and that's why I want to have you on. You're an expert in this. You're not here as a partisan, so it's trying to give a neutral look to all of this. But let's come to Illinois, where a lot of our listeners are, and for me, it's that what's known as the SALT provision,
that's
state
correct.
And local tax. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm so happy to have you here because I think that piece kills us. Depending on where you live, especially if you live in the city of Chicago.
That's correct. It is going to have a negative effect on places like New York and New Jersey and California, and ultimately Illinois.
All blue states.
All blue states. And I don't think that's actually what's involved here. The issue is that assume you want to raise $1,000 for the government to run. If you allow states which have very high taxes to deduct a lot of their taxes that you pay in the state, that means the people from that state pay fewer dollars than they would otherwise. In the states where they have no income tax, Washington State, Texas, and so forth, they end up having to pay a larger portion of that $1,000. So what happens is that these states with low taxes in a sense, are subsidizing those of us with high taxes. And what the tax policy is intended to do is to say, we'll give you some deduction for paying your state taxes, up to $10,000. But after that, we can't do anymore. We want to make it fairer across all states. Because if you're in Washington State or Texas, when it comes to that line, how much did you pay in state income tax? There's nothing. You get no deduction because of the tax structure in that particular state. So places like Illinois, we have high taxes across the board, which means we will get to deduct fewer dollars, which means we will pay a little bit more.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now, banks and energy companies led U.S. stocks higher in subdued trading yesterday, erasing modest losses from the day before. The Dow Jones Industrial Average gained 55 points to close at 24,782. The Nasdaq picked up 4.5 points, finishing at 69.65. The S&P 500 rose 5.25 points. The world's major cryptocurrencies proved their volatility overnight, Bitcoin plunging more than 20% to a low of 12,504. Before climbing back above the psychological 13,000 mark. Still isn't clear what prompted the sudden sell-off. Qualcomm has obtained a permit to test autonomous vehicles on public roads in California. It's the latest step in the chipmaker's efforts to gain a foothold in the self-driving car market. And a holiday warning comes from the FBI. Toys that connect to the Internet could invite hackers into your home. Experts say users can mitigate the risk by using only secure Wi-Fi and turning off the toy when you're not playing with it. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
All right, this is The Opening Bell. I'm Paul Lisnick, in for Steve Grzanich from WGN-TV. I'm talking to Professor Mike Miller from DePaul University. Mike, before the break, we talked about the notion of the SALT, the state and local property taxes, and I said it still kind of irks me here. The truth of it is, maybe if you live downstate Illinois or other places outside of the city of Chicago, maybe Cook County, it doesn't hurt as much. The issue is, in the city, if you have high property taxes, that's who's getting hurt, right?
Exactly,
that's the question.
Right. And understand that about 60% or more of people currently do not itemize. They just take the standard deduction. And my understanding is because of the doubling of the standard deduction, that's going to rise to nearly 80%. So the people being hurt by this SALT deduction tend to be, for the lack of a better word, they tend to be the rich. And, of course, if you think of what the Democrats argued for a long time, they wanted the rich to pay more. And in one situation, this is exactly what's going to happen. It just so happens that all of these people affected are in high-tax states, which tend to be Democratic states.
And the way it's going to work in Illinois is, you've mentioned this $10,000 threshold. The way it ended up in this bill is that $10,000 is a, am I right, combination between property taxes and state and local taxes. So how does that get – Why do we do that? If we pay $5,000 in property taxes, what else gets added in?
Then if you pay $5,000 in state income tax, you can deduct that up to $10,000. So I assume whatever package you would use or your accountant would add up all of your things. And once it's over 10, you have to stop that. You only get that $10,000
deduction. If somebody pays the AMT, the alternative minimum tax, do you have special words for
that? I have been told that because of the way the AMT works, that you do not get an advantage by paying your taxes early. I know a lot of people are doing that because these taxes paid now will be towards the tax return you put in April, and you can still deduct however much you want. But I have been told by a tax accountant that it all depends upon whether you pay the AMT and you get the full AMT or the partial. And so before you would make the decision to pay it, if you're a high-income person, please double check with your advisor.
It looks like Cook County was ready for that, because Cook County, I went on the website yesterday and there it was on the homepage, sort of, hey, you want to pay next year's first installment early, and that's because they would like that money, but
absolutely.
This is what people may consider doing.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. So much more to talk about, because it's a complex plan. There's a lot of details to it, and we're going to do that in just a little bit. It is just about 5:28 on The Opening Bell.
This is Catherine Davis with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoInno.com. Chicago came in number one on a list of the best places to celebrate Christmas. The list, made by personal finance website WalletHub, looked at a variety of factors to put together its rankings, including affordability, the number of Christmas events, and shopping. Chicago outranked San Francisco, Pittsburgh, New York, and Seattle for the top spot. Tempus announced Thursday that it has partnered with CancerLink to get access to the group's database of cancer patients, which will double Tempus's data stockpile. Tempus, which is led by Groupon co-founder Eric Lefkofsky, uses machine learning and genomic sequencing to better understand cancer tumors. Chicago-based Boeing has been in takeover talks with Brazilian aircraft maker Embraer, according to the Wall Street Journal. Embraer, which has a market value of $3.7 billion, is the third largest commercial jet manufacturer in the world. The Wall Street Journal said the deal is expected to involve a relatively large premium for Embraer. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at chicagoinno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Boy, if ever we were talking about the life of business and business of life, it's this morning as we explore the tax plan. This is WGN-TV's Paul Lisnick in for Steve this morning, and I'm continuing my chat with Professor Mike Miller, Associate Professor, Associate Dean for Quality and Compliance in the Department of Economics at DePaul University. Mike, that's a great title. You know what? I was an assistant dean over at Loyola Law School. My title was never that good.
Oh, yeah. We have some people are involved in dealing with students, some involved with curriculum, some dealing with faculty. I deal with compliance.
That's a great title. I want to talk about the corporate tax.
Sure.
Because there's been a lot of happiness on the part of corporations, animosity on the part of people. A two-part question. Number one, how come theirs is permanent when yours and mine is a temporary reprieve? And then secondly, this lowering of the rate from 35% to 21%, many skeptics about this plan say corporations don't pay 35% anyway. They're effectively paying 12 or 13. That's, we don't need this.
Well, in terms of that, especially the second piece of it, I understand economists believe that we always react at the margin, not on average. So if I make one more dollar, what I care about is what tax do I pay on that ultimate dollar that I make, not what I'll end up paying on average over the, when I do my taxes at the end. And when it comes to that marginal rate at 35%, it's essentially the highest in the world, which means when corporations could locate somewhere else and they make that same dollar, they'll pay only 25%, not 35%. And on top of that, we had what was called a world tax thing, that if you make money in Europe and you pay 20% in Europe on your corporate, on your profits, that when they bring that money back, we make them pay the difference between that rate in Europe, the 20%, and the 35% here. So that led corporations to leave their money overseas because they don't want to be taxed, in a sense, twice. So under the new tax law, we are doing it in such ways called territorial. You'll pay whatever the tax rate is at the place where you make the money. So, and what's also going to happen then is with our tax rate being smaller, 21%, there's less chance that corporations will try to move their headquarters to Ireland or somewhere else where they have a much lower tax rate. And some of us, myself included, I would have been perfectly happy had they gotten rid of the corporate tax completely, because corporations don't pay taxes. They remit taxes. They send them in. If you have any interest in this, Google sometime Milton Friedman on corporate taxation, and make
UFC
it clear.
UFC professor.
Yes, he was at the University of Chicago, and he makes it perfectly clear. Just like if you go into a sandwich shop, you pay for the bread, you pay for the lettuce, you pay for the lights, and understand you also pay for the income tax that company pays. And so when a corporation pays taxes, it either comes out of the stockholders' hide, or it comes out of the workers, or it comes out of the customers. So why we have this corporate tax, in my mind, the best deal would have been no corporate taxes, and then you and I would pay the taxes on consumption when we would pay, say, a sales tax, or we would pay it.
But under
on
that
our
theory, then our taxes would be much higher.
That's correct. That's right. But we would make more money. So in other words, those of us who are stockholders in our retirement and so forth, we would get larger dividends, but then we would have to pay more taxes on that larger amount of dividends.
So a related question then, and again, skeptics to this plan have said the notion of lowering the corporate rate is going to lead to companies hiring more and paying higher wages. That's the theory of this. That's a trickle-down concept we got from Reagan days. And skeptics, Democrats especially, have looked and just go, that is not what's happening. This is higher dividends to investor. That's where that money's going. And nobody's going to see higher rates. Now, I have to say, so I want you to respond to that, but yes, yesterday, various companies, Comcast was one of them I read, you know, they're giving $1,000 bonuses right. to all sorts of employees. And I'm curious, I was surprised by that. I just, to me, that is that really about, oh, it's so great, we want to share it? Or was that just a message to the guy at the top, the president, just kind of saying, hey, look what we're doing?
I'm not sure exactly why they were doing that. But here, the deal is, if the corporations can keep more of their own money, they will pay more in dividends, so you and I will make more, those of us who
if we have stock.
If we have, well, in your retirement, you probably do. Almost everybody through their retirement owns stocks and so forth. But the deal is, what the argument is that when corporations can write off, for example, for the next 5 years, if they buy a piece of equipment, they can write off the entire price of that equipment this year instead of having to depreciate it over X number of years. This lowers their taxable income. This also incents them then to buy those pieces of capital. Those pieces of capital make the workers that work with that corporation more productive, which allows them to get a higher pay. So the deal is the intention of the tax law is to increase the long-run potential growth rate of the United States. So we've been running since the end of the Great Recession. The average growth rate of GDP has only been 2%. The long-run average growth rate since 1946 is 3.2. Part of the deal here is to try to get firms to invest more, and that new investment will raise productivity, which will raise people's wages and hiring. And this will then raise the long-run potential growth rate of the economy. So it'll grow at 3 or 3.5%, not the 2% it's been doing lately. That's in theory. Now, whether that'll happen, you have to ask me in 5 years.
Ah, okay. Well, we'll come back.
Yeah.
But isn't there also a concern if the premise makes sense. If I am a corporation, I'm making more money, I'm clearly going to invest and get better mm-hmm. equipment. But the other thing that we're seeing, and this is the advancements of technology, I may invest in equipment in such a way that I don't need my employees
That's
anymore
correct.
And I go robotic.
I agree. And we've feared that always. If you go back hundreds of years, they tried to stop the candle makers, did not like the idea of letting in the sunshine because people didn't need candles and so forth. A lot of people think this one is different, that we in fact are going to see robots taking over jobs. But employment has always increased. Even right now, we do see employment is increasing in spite of the fact that you have the robots. It's just
part of it is retooling and I have
correct.
To learn new skills.
And if you go back 15 or 20 years and look at where the growth rate is in jobs now, a lot of the jobs which people are getting today didn't even exist 15 or 20 years ago. And I couldn't tell you what the jobs will be in 20 years that might be the ones that will create all the new jobs. I'm not that smart. Somebody's going to come up with some new investment, some new idea, which will employ people to do these various things.
I also asked you in the first part of our discussion about the corporate tax rate, the permanency of it. There are some people who are upset. And I think this would be a factual truth, which is 7 or 8 years from now, the
right.
corporations continue to enjoy these reductions,
right.
but you and me, those deductions are going away. And the argument is we'll be in worse shape individually because not only do we lose the reductions in the tax brackets that we're about to enjoy,
yeah.
if indeed we do, but in addition, the SALT provisions, some of
right.
that won't go away. So
correct.
We'll actually be in worse shape.
That's possible. But this was done for a political reason. The only way they could get it through the Congress, through the Senate, without having to go to the 60 votes was to do it this way, to have this sunset provision.
And that's because there was a limit. They could only raise the deficit by $1.5 trillion.
That's correct. So the thought that somehow between now and 2025, nothing will be done to – if things are going really well, you know darn well whether it's a Democratic or a Republican Congress, they're not about to kill this golden goose. If things are going badly, then they'll let it expire and do something about it. But I do want to warn it in terms of – when we were looking at the cost of this particular bill, they put it at $1.5 trillion,
right.
meaning we'll add $1.5 trillion in total national debt – over the 10-year period, or $150 billion a year in deficit. The only thing I would say is, as an economist, there are certain things which are facts, but those facts are things that have already happened. A forecast is not a fact. These are our best guesses going forward. And it turns out of all the forecasts that economists make of GDP and of unemployment and so forth, the one forecast for which we are notoriously bad is the size of deficits of federal governments. And I have been – some research I was looking at said that after 2 years, you'd be just as well throwing a dart at a dartboard as you would be accepting forecasts of the size of deficits that you have.
It's hard to believe that in 2000 we were running a surplus under Bill Clinton and so forth, and things were going really well. In my classes in money and banking, we were talking about what will the United States do when it pays off its national debt and the Federal Reserve has no treasury bills to carry out its monetary policy. Because we made these projections with all these future surpluses going 10 years into the future, we could pay off the national debt. And we look back now and you can almost laugh out loud of how preposterous that forecast was. Now, I'm not saying these forecasts are that bad. It could be that, in fact, they understate how bad the deficit will be, or they may overstate it. But I just want to make sure we have it clear that these are just guesses. These are not facts.
Right. And I'm glad you made that last point. So they go either way. If a proponent of this plan, I'm going, there's no way that's going to happen. Growth itself is going to take care of the deficit.
That's correct.
If I'm a skeptic, I'm going, yeah, or maybe it's $3 trillion.
That's right. See, that's one of the problems when you're doing something which is called static scoring. You assume that taxes fall and nobody reacts in any way, compared to dynamic scoring, where you assume that people react to the change in the tax laws. Both of those are assumptions which are just made up. They're not, again, they're not facts. So even the dynamic scoring that would say, which the Republicans like, that when you lower the taxes, people will work harder, they will work more hours, corporations will invest more dollars, this will cause growth to rise and so forth. That's their guess. And therefore, if you make that guess and you make the forecast, you get the numbers that they get.
So this may be one of the most important questions. If I'm listening to this show, I'm the average worker out there, I get my paycheck. One of the points the president has said over and over again, you are going to feel this Christmas gift starting in February in your paychecks. With all this stuff we've been talking about, how is it I'm feeling it in my personal paycheck 2 months from now?
Okay. So what happens is when you have a W-9 or a form that you turn into your employer to say, take these number of deductions and so forth. And then when you make money, they say, okay, on what annual income is this representing? And from that, they assign a certain tax that you have to have withheld. So, for example, I have some figures here. Let's say that you're a married couple and you file jointly and you make $100,000. That puts you into what is called the 22% tax bracket. But in the current year, in 2017, you're in the 25% tax bracket. So what will happen is your employer will take out 22%, not 25%.
Starting
in February. And that way, you want to take out less because you're going to owe less at the end of the year, and therefore you don't want to overpay the government. So, yes, there will be this reduction in the amount of income tax which is taken out of your paycheck every 2 weeks.
Wow. Professor Mike Miller, Associate Professor, Associate Dean for Quality and Compliance in the Department of Economics at DePaul University. You were just as insightful as I hoped you would be. Would you do my taxes?
I have somebody do mine. It's called
hoping somebody would do that. Thank you so much for being with
me.
I appreciate it.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
And good morning. Welcome back to The Opening Bell. This is WGN-TV's Paul Lisnick in for Steve Grzanich. Let's check on the WGN Associated Bank market desk this morning. Update some international numbers. The DAX closed down 0.17%. The FTSE up 0.07%. The CAC closing down at 0.25%. Nikkei up 0.16%. And the Hang Seng also closing up at 0.72%. And now let's get the latest on agriculture and commodities with a true broadcasting legend. That's the way I see you, Orion Samuelson. Good morning.
Well, thank you. I see me as, I hope, a good friend of yours and everybody else in the WGN family. But yeah, I've enjoyed the company for 57 years.
Wow.
And having too much fun to quit.
So. Another 50 to go, my friend.
Yes, indeed. And we're working on that. As we take a look at agriculture, of course, and Wall Street, we're looking at short trading sessions today. Markets will be closing at noon, and then will not reopen until regular trading hours on Tuesday, because the markets will be closed Monday for Christmas Day. So keep that in mind. And the same schedule will be the same next week ahead of the New Year's holiday. And so trading volume is certainly lighter these days. a lot of the traders taking early time off for the Christmas holiday. So sometimes that frightens traders, because small trading volume can sometimes lead to big price swings in the marketplace. Didn't happen yesterday, but wheat did recover a little bit of its earlier losses, and March wheat ended the day at 4.27 a bushel. That was up 3.5 cents. March corn up 1.75 cents at 3.51 1/4 a bushel. And January soybeans ended the day down 6.25 cents, 9.48 3/4. And over at the Mercantile Exchange, pretty much a green screen. February lean hogs up 17 cents a hundredweight at 68.57. The December, make that the February live cattle contract, up 82 cents, $119.67, and the January feeder cattle contract ended up $1.05 at 142.92 a hundredweight. So that's what happened in the marketplace yesterday. Keep in mind, it'll be a shorter trading session in the marketplace today.
Orion, just curious, the as we go into the new year, you've said it's quiet, it is the holiday season, but we also have this tax plan coming into play. Is there any connection between the tax structure and how that changes and then your world and looking at agricultural numbers? Is there an impact?
Well, there is an impact, and I haven't had time to go through the details of the tax reform program. But
you'll need a couple of weeks for that one.
Yeah, I think so. Take a long time. But farmers and ranchers will be impacted, because so many of them are members of farmer cooperatives that take crops off the farm, process them, and sell them, or that provide goods for farmers and ranchers, the fertilizer and the crop protection and all that. And I know that cooperatives are going to be affected by the new tax law. But at this point, I'm not really sure of how much of an impact it will have. So,
right. Well, I guess we're going to have the answer soon enough in the new year.
I think we will, and we'll be watching it carefully.
All right, Orion Samuelson, really, true, a broadcasting legend. I don't say that lightly, and I wish you just a wonderful holiday season and a very happy and healthy new year.
And the same to you.
Thank you. On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for today, Friday, December 22nd, 2017. University of Michigan releasing the Consumer Sentiment Report. The report on new home sales along with durable goods, that's out today. Earning reports we'll see today are from Jamba Incorporated, China Southern Airlines, Actinium Pharmaceuticals. That's just some of the things that could move the markets on Friday, December 22nd.